Good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson, the car guru, and this morning I'm going to tell you a story. Do you like stories? You know, I always like a good story, especially if it involves truth, things that really happened. You know, if it's a fiction story, it doesn't do that much for me, although I can get excited about a little bit of fiction. That's not what this is about. This is a true story about a man and about a car. Now, in the interest of not getting sued, I'm going to not use the man's original last name. His first name is Truman, and his second fake name is Jackson. And the story starts just north of the Golden Gate Bridge. Have you ever been to California? I hope you have. It's a beautiful place. A lot of unusual things happen in California that we won't get into, but there is no denying the beauty of California, and especially the San Francisco Bay Area. I've been to San Francisco many, many times. The car makers tend to have a lot of conventions out there because it's such a fun place to be and a beautiful place to be. But as you cross the Golden Gate Bridge and pass by a little community called Sausalito and continue to head north on 101, there's a little town there called Corte Madera. And this is where Truman Jackson actually lived. Now, he was a junior. He had a dad, and the reason I know that is because the dad had to co-sign on a loan for Truman. Obviously, he had been dreaming about having, it must have been a Ford Lover, his actual vehicle that was traded in on the vehicle that I'm going to tell you about, was a 1963 Ford Falcon two-door. Now, I don't know if you remember the Falcon or not, but it was Ford's first attempt at coming up with a small car, you know, something to compete against some of the, like Volkswagen and some of the Japanese imports that were starting to become popular. Not quite so much yet, but still, they were on the horizon. I think Ford Motor Company recognized that there needed to be a little car out there that that folks could afford and buy. That would compete with them. The Falcon was a pretty decent little car, 63 model. You know, they continued the Falcon for a while, but Henry Ford Jr., who was actually Henry Ford's grandson, decided that they really didn't want to build any more cars for a while. Nothing new. And the reason he felt that way was primarily because of a car called the Edsel, and it had been a miserable failure. And that stung, and it's probably stung a lot because that was the name of his father, and it was his idea to call it the Edsel. But Ford had developed this little car, and at that near that time, his president of Ford Motor Company was a guy named Lee Iacocca, and Mr. Iacocca wanted to develop a sporty car. He just felt that there was a huge market for a personalized two-door a sporty car for the Ford Motor Company. And eventually that became the Mustang. Now, he developed that car in a manner that Henry Ford Jr. wouldn't find out about, or Henry Ford II is what I should call him. He was referred to as the Deuce. But the Deuce had decided, no, we're not coming out with any more cars. So Lee Iacocca and his co-conspirators developed the Mustang, and they used the Ford Falcon as the foundation for the Mustang. And when they finally went for approval to Mr. Ford's office, they were shot down immediately, but they said, we need to do this because the chassis is already developed and we already have a prototype and you need to come downstairs and look at it. And he did. And so they built the Ford Mustang. Well, you know, California was a booming market. I guess it still is, but it was definitely booming in the 60s. My cousin and his family moved to Southern California in the late 60s and were a part of that as far as the development south of Los Angeles. But, you know, up just Northern California was booming as well. And so this is where this gentleman grew up and had his 63 Ford Falcon. And one day he decided to go to a Ford dealership called Bishop Hansel Ford. It was located in Santa Rosa, which I don't know exactly how many miles it is, but it's north. It looks like it's about maybe 30 miles north of of Corte Madera, but Bishop Hansel Ford Sales, 421 B Street, Santa Rosa, California. And apparently they got a Mustang in. It was actually a Mustang Fastback base, had a 289 V8 engine, but it was special because it had been upgraded to a four-barrel high-performance version. It had a four-speed manual transmission, limited slip differential. I'm reading right off the window sticker. Full-length console, front disc brakes, AM radio, and tinted glass. AM radio, by the way, cost $57.51 back then. The grand total for this car, including $135.20 shipping charges, was $36,01.57. Now, this car didn't have to go too far. I don't know. San Jose is not very far away. I know it's south of San Francisco. But San Jose was where one of the three plants where Ford Mustangs were built. So this car was transported from the plant just a little bit north to this dealership in Santa Rosa. So anyway, apparently around November the 22nd, Mr. Jackson drove north with his father to go to this dealership because apparently they had received this 1966 Mustang in signal flare red. Beautiful color. Two-door. Fastback, beautiful car, red wall tires, 4.5-inch wide wheels, not a lot of traction there. But anyway, he wanted it, so he traded his 1963 Ford Falcon. The vehicle sale price was $36,01, which was actually the window sticker. See, this isn't the only time that people have to pay window sticker for cars. They had to do it back then, too. Sales tax was $144, official licensing fees. Brought it up to $37,61.63. Now, you take away his Ford Falcon two-door, the value of it was appraised at $850. Unfortunately, he owed $920 on it, so he was in the hole, not like people are today. Maybe it was significant to him at the time. He was in the hole $70.98. He paid a deposit of $500 and actually ended up buying insurance from the dealership. See, that was a thing back in the 60s and 70s. People actually bought car insurance at the dealership, but they also bought some other kind of insurance, like life insurance and accident and health insurance. Now, we sold that in our dealership until probably the mid-90s. We stopped selling accident and health and credit life because it just got so expensive, and it really wasn't a good value. I don't know how good of a value it was back in 1966 either. But anyway, he financed the car. The unpaid balance was about $3,500. And the interest rate, I'm trying to find the interest rate here. Well, apparently in 1966, you didn't have to tell people what the interest rate was. Finance charge was $733 if he waited the entire 36 months to pay it off to the tune of $75 a month. Yes, that was Mr. Jackson's monthly payment on this 66 Mustang. So I'm going to take my first break here, and then we'll continue with the rest of the story. All right, we're back. So we've been talking about a story about a 66 Mustang. And it all started out in California, and you know, time moves on. People get older. Their needs change. And usually people will trade cars every 3 years. 3 to 4 years. I'm not sure exactly what the average is now, but that's about right. I mean, with people financing cars for 84 months now, 96 months, that's probably going to change. You know, as long as car values hold where they are right now, which they aren't going to, but if they did, then, you know, you could keep a car for a long time and not really worry about losing a tremendous amount of value in it. Sometimes they even go up in value, like the car we're talking about right now. And that might have been what Mr. Jackson thought, because he bought the vehicle in November 22nd of 1966. He kept that car until October the 10th, 2015. Goodness gracious, 49 years is how long he kept that car. And then he sold the car to a gentleman who was a friend of his who also lived in California. And he kept the car for a little over a year. And then he sold it to a place called National Muscle Cars. They purchased the car and did a complete frame-off, body-off restoration. Rebuilt the motor, turned it into a really better than a brand-new 66 Mustang. I have no idea what they spent on that car, except just to speculate. But I'd say to restore that car to that level, it was at least $50,000 to $60,000. So then they turned around and sold it to a guy in New Jersey. He bought it on 9/14/2017. And then he kept it for a few years and ended up selling it to the people that I bought it from. Yes, this 1966 Mustang is now sitting proudly in the showroom at Gateway Ford. And I couldn't be happier to have it here. And one of the main reasons I'm happy about having it here is because I know all this history. You know, I think about all the cars that I have had over the years not like I have some kind of big car collection, because I don't, but I have bought a lot of cars and sold a lot of cars. And, you know, my main priority is to kind of bring them back to life. I like to find them. I like to fix them and then find a new owner for them. And I've done pretty well at that over the years. Not that I've made that much money. I've just had a lot of fun, you know, and having fun is very important. I see that more and more now, the older I get. But, you know, you look at cars like this, there aren't many of them that have followed a path like this, especially the long-time ownership. So many of these cars ended up in junkyards or just sitting out in a field just rusting to nothing. And the fact that this car has been brought back to life, it literally needs to be in a museum. It really does. I should call... who's the guy who's the president of Ford? Jim Farley. He is the president. I'll give him a call and say, this needs to be in the Ford Museum. But it's going to cost you, though. So I thought you might enjoy hearing this story and how it kind of ended up in the showroom at Gateway. Born in the Mustang plant at San Jose, California. Takes a 99-mile trip to Santa Rosa, California, across the Golden Gate Bridge, and is sold at a dealership there called Bishop Hansel Ford. And then you go just a little bit south of there and lives 49 years in that same location. This guy apparently was in the construction industry, and he used his fastback Mustang as a truck, apparently. And then his plumber neighbor, who is also... I talked to him on the phone, is in the construction industry, primarily plumbing, and he's 80 years old now and has actually showed cars at Pebble Beach. Obviously a car collector, car restorer. He's had multiple cars used in movies that were shot in the San Francisco Bay Area. Very interesting guy. We had a good conversation. But anyway, that's just the thrill for me. It's fun to go through this process, and it's kind of like a little bit of detective work, but it makes the car mean that much more to me now that I know. So we'll see. We've been going through that same kind of a process at my parents' house. My brother and I have spent a lot of time together and just going through, you know, what they've left behind. And, you know, it's just like we're rediscovering who they were. And of course we knew them. I mean, we knew them as our parents and people who took care of us and busted our rears when we needed it. That didn't happen very often. I was kind of afraid of my dad. No reason to be. He just, all he had to do is squeeze me on the leg, and I knew it was time to pipe down. But, you know, I just respected him, and that was true to the day he died, and my mom as well. And now as we go through all of their documents and things like that, it's just, there are times where I'm sad. But most of the time it's exciting to see all this stuff that they preserved, and I know it's it's kind of a chore for a lot of folks when they lose their parents or whatever to go back and have to go through all the stuff that they left behind. And the good thing about mom and dad is that they never got rid of anything that meant a lot to them. Anything that didn't mean a lot to them, didn't have any history associated with it or whatever, they'd pitch. It's not like they were hoarders or anything, but they certainly did keep a lot, and we're having quite the time going through it. But that history, the historical thing, we found a bunch of old magazines from old Life magazines from the 60s and things that they, you know, world events that they thought were important. That's just, it's a healing, you know what I mean? It's just kind of a healing process for my brother and myself. So anyway, speaking of healing, is your car misbehaving right now? Do you know where to take it if it has a particular kind of problem? Well, I'm going to share some secrets with you here in just a second that might help you out. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. You know, I'm a firm believer in taking advantage of the skills of people who know a lot more than I do. For example, I've got a guy that handles all my plumbing issues and one that handles all my electrical issues, and I'm sure you probably do too. But if your car breaks, where do you go? Especially if it's out of warranty. Now, if it's under warranty, I know where you're going to go, right? You're going to go to the dealership that sells your brand. Now, you may have a bad experience at the dealership who sold you the car, and you don't want to go back anymore for some one reason or another, and I understand that. And so you're going to a different dealer that sells that same brand. In some cases, though, that can be rather inconvenient. So if, for example, if somebody buys a car in Bristol and they have a problem with a Honda, then they've got to go to Johnson City or they got to go to Kingsport or Roanoke or wherever. And, you know, that's not always a straightforward process, especially if they don't have loaner cars. And I get it. But if you have other issues, let's say that you're out of your manufacturer's warranty, but you bought a service contract that protected you up to like 6 years or 100,000 miles. Now, where do you take your car? Well, the people who sold you the warranty want you to take it back to the dealer that sells that car, but you don't have to. If you have an independent shop that you have a lot of faith in, then, of course, you can always take your car to them. The problem is that you have to administer, somebody has to administer the claim. And if you go to an independent shop, and many times they're going to look at you and say, we don't honor that warranty. And you can call the warranty company and get them to pay for the repairs with a Visa card or American Express or whatever that particular shop takes. If you really have a lot of faith in them and you want to get your car fixed by them, that's fine. I don't recommend it. I always recommend going back to the dealer who sells that brand, who has all of the required factory tools and equipment, the technical service bulletins, the access to all the information from the manufacturer. You know, that's priceless, and it can get to the problem a lot quicker, but it's a little bit more expensive sometimes. But you tell me which is more expensive, going to one place and getting it fixed right the first time or taking it back over and over again and missing work and all that stuff. So sometimes it just pays to go to the dealership. The biggest issue that most consumers have with dealers in general or service advisors is that there's a communication gap. You're speaking one language, consumer language, and he's speaking technical language. And it's always great to find somebody who can speak your language, you know, somebody that understands what you understand and that you don't understand cars necessarily. Now, if you have tire issues, brake issues, just maintenance type things, you're out of warranty, you can go just about anywhere. I mean, most technicians have some basic understanding. I would just make sure that the shop has ASC certified technicians. What that means is that they have passed some tests. Now, that doesn't mean they can fix anything, but they have passed some tests. If you have a garage that has been in business a while, you do the, you know, you can check on Angie's List or just check some reputations, see what their Google ratings are. You know, that's pretty much going to give you an indication of whether or not they're satisfying their customers or not. But if it's a tire brake issue, charging system, that kind of stuff, then just about any good tire store, you know, for like Free Service Tire or Pep Boys or somebody like that can take care of those issues. If you have a check engine light, if you have a situation with drivability, handling, you know, you're feeling a transmission acting up, you don't need to go to an aftermarket shop for that, because more or less what's going to happen, unless they have some pretty high skill level people in their shop, is they're going to look at that thing and charge you for looking at it, and they're going to say you need to go to the dealer. And that was kind of a wasted trip. So go to the dealer first with those kind of issues, and I think you'll be a lot happier. Oil changes, it matters where you go. Again, I recommend dealers. I know it's might be a little bit more expensive. Probably not, though. I mean, if you bought a prepaid maintenance plan, please remember that you did that when you bought your car, because a lot of people forget. You know what percent of people forget that they bought a prepaid maintenance plan and they've already paid for all the oil changes, but they take it someplace else to get it changed? About 60%. Come on, people. Remember what you bought when you're at the dealership. Review that paperwork when you get home. Don't wait, because you might see that you bought something that you didn't even know you bought. Just make sure you use the correct oil filters for your car while it's under warranty. Keep all of your receipts. Just cram them in that messy glove box of yours, and then you'll have it whenever you have a warranty issue and you have to take it to the dealership to get it fixed anyway. So I know it may be less convenient to go to the dealership, but if you make an appointment, they'll get you right in and get you right out. I'm not that, you know, it's not like I have any horses in the race as far as where you go. If you come down here, I know what we do, and most dealerships will do about the same thing. I mean, an oil change should not take an hour and a half. I mean, it should take about 30 to 40 minutes max, but still, some dealers aren't real efficient in that regard. Well, anyway, I hope some of this information helps you. I hope you enjoyed my little story, and I will be back tomorrow for another edition of My Car Guru.